Hello and welcome to another jam-packed episode of My Favorite Conservative. I am Edward.
And I am Andrea, but I am not conservative.
What?
No.
Stop.
No, but he is my favorite conservative.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Right. And we start the show the same way.
We do?
We do.
A very short-term memory loss.
All right. So this the theme of season three is the march to the election. So we always start with the polls. So in the RCP, Real Clear Politics, if you don't know what that means at this point, national average Trump versus Harris. Last week, Harris was up by 1.9. Now she's up by 2.0. That's right. She gained a tenth of a point.
All right. And we also look back from 2020 and to 2016 on this day in history. And in 2020, Joe Biden had a lead on Donald Trump of 6.1.
Woo!
And Hillary Clinton had a lead of 3.0. And right now, Harris is up 2. So
historically, she's behind.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah. Indeed. Yeah. If you want to put it in that perspective. Mm-hmm. All right, so let's get to the battleground states. Why don't you go out east, Edward?
Let's start in the east. Let's go with Pennsylvania, a very important state.
Yes.
Last week, Kamala Harris was up 0.7. This week, she's up 0.4. A little bit of a drop there.
Yep.
Stay on the East Coast in North Carolina, and our hearts go out to all those people that are suffering. Hopefully, you're going to be recovering quickly. But in North Carolina, from the hurricane, yes, I'm sorry, from the hurricane. From Donald Trump last week was up 0.1. He is now up 1.4. So that's a pretty good jump there in
North
Carolina.
That's huge, North Carolina. I think that's significant, yes.
And the great state of Georgia, last week Trump was up 1.7. This week he's up 1.5.
It's a slight drop.
It is. You want to take us to the upper Midwest?
Oh, yes. So in the Midwest, last week, Harris was up 1.7 in Michigan. She remains at 1.7. And in Wisconsin last week, Harris was up 1, and she remains up 1 point. So no change for Harris in Michigan or Wisconsin.
Okay. Why don't you take us out west then?
All right. So out west, Nevada, last week, Harris was up 0.2. I don't know what happened. I don't know. She doesn't really do, you know, rallies, but now she's up 1.2. So that's a significant increase, just like Trump's is in North Carolina.
Yeah
very mm-hmm. significant. And then last but not least, Arizona last week, Trump was up 1.6. He's up now 2.0. And I do think he'll get Arizona.
Okay, let's hope. And what about that gambling site that you like to
get? I know. I always see you watching live. Hello to everyone watching us live. And please feel free, if you're comfortable, to comment live. We can see your comments on YouTube, I believe Facebook, and I believe LinkedIn, but not necessarily all the other channels. So gambling website, predictit.org. Where people actually bet on the races. So last week, the differential, is that right? The difference. Okay, I'm getting all fancy here. Between Harris and Trump was 12. Now 12 points, but 12 cents. And we thought this would be an easier way to sort of explain it. This week, that has tightened to only 8 cents. So Harris is at 56, Trump is at 48. So we kind of hypothesized that the gamblers might be shorting Trump a little bit for short-term gains.
They could.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So, but it's a very fascinating website. And I will say, I think it was the last election I gambled. I did, because I just, it was so much fun. I broke even. So it's all good. All right. So let's get into it. We've got lots of people watching live. What are we going to talk about today?
Well, since Kamala is out campaigning and telling everyone,
if that's what you call it. Well, yes. Okay.
She's out giving speeches, not a lot of interviews,
yes.
But she's telling everyone how great her vision for America is without being specific at all.
I know.
Right.
I mean, sign of a true politician.
Unfortunately, it's the trend, but yes. I thought it would be fun to go to her website and check that out.
Because that's where all the answers are.
Supposedly. Yes.
Okay. So let's get to it.
Well, let me start with, before we look at her website, Kamala would like you to believe that she's going to cut your taxes, secure the border, reduce inflation, reduce grocery store prices, frack and drill for oil everywhere.
Well, you forgot one.
Oh, wait. Well, also, what, health insurance premiums were going to come down.
Yes.
Remember that? Yes, just like that. And she's going to start all this on day one.
Yeah, she's going to do it all on day one. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that day one was over 1,300 days ago. Please don't forget that she is part of the Biden-Harris administration. It's literally, you know, her last name. So what exactly is she going to do differently than Joe Biden? Because he promised all of those things in 2020. And I just actually want to recap them for people. Mm-hmm. Okay. Because in my opinion, you went a little fast.
Okay. Let it rip.
So day one, this is what Kamala is going to do. This is what Biden promised to do. Cut your taxes. Secure the border. Do not even get me started. Reduce inflation that they caused. Reduce grocery prices related to inflation. Frack and drill for oil. Remember what Biden did? Remember that? Okay. Keystone. That's all I'm going to say. And reduce your health insurance premiums. And she's going to do all this on day one. How is that working out?
Depends for who, but not well for just about everybody. But here's the thing is she will say anything to win the election.
Absolutely.
Right. Ask Bernie Sanders. He went on one of the talk shows last week and said that exact thing. He said, it's an election. She has to say these things.
You know what? Say what you want about Bernie Sanders, but he's honest.
He's honest. Yeah.
He's so honest.
To a fault. I'm sure they were cringing in the
Harris
campaign.
Are you sure they were cringy?
But it brought me back to remember the 2019 debates when she was on stage with Joe Biden.
This is the primary. Democratic primary.
She never got out of. But anyway, never even got to the first primary.
Yes.
But she was in the debate with everybody on stage.
I remember.
And she called Joe Biden a racist.
I remember. Everyone
absolutely.
Remembers. Yes.
Later on, she was on one of those idiot talk shows, late night shows, and they asked her about it. And she just laughed and said, it was a debate. It was a debate. So basically, you're allowed to say anything. Doesn't matter whether it's true or not in a debate, and you can just walk away from it. So what I'm concerned about, and everybody in Pennsylvania should look at this and say, she's going to say, you know, well, we can't, you know, we have to stop fracking because, you know, obviously the climate change and everything else, but they're going to ask her about it. And she's going to say, you know, it was a campaign. So does that justify you misrepresenting?
Well, you said she said she's going to stop fracking. No. Now, after the election.
After the election, she will.
So let's take a look at, this is according to her website. This is my favorite, by the way. So the overarching theme, and you've heard her say this everywhere, she's going to build an opportunity economy.
A what?
Opportunity economy. You got to give credit to whoever came up with that turn of phrase, and lower cost for families. Now, when she's asked about the specifics, why don't you tell people what she actually says?
Well, let's go. This is actually from her website.
Yes.
The first line. Vice President Harris grew up in a middle-class home as the daughter of a working mom. Blah, 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 blah.
Right. Yeah.
That's your answer to everything that's on the stump. That's the only answer that she knows. And it just comes out like she pulls out a card out of her.
And there's a time to tell your personal story. I mean, I want to say that it's okay to tell your personal story. But when you don't have actual policies to explain the opportunity economy... But continue.
Yeah, it also says she will make it top priority to bring down the cost and increase economic security for all Americans. She will fight to cut taxes for more than 100 million working and middle class families. And she will lower the cost of everyday needs like healthcare, housing and groceries. Please, everybody remember, she's the incumbent.
Essentially.
She is in office now.
Yes, she is in office right now.
And just this week, let me expand on that real quickly.
Okay.
Just this week, Joe Biden was actually out and they asked him and he said that Kamala was with him on every decision that he made and he entrusted her.
Well,
with
she said
every
that
decision.
Too.
Yeah. So you can't run away from it if you were there with Joe Biden making those decisions.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. All right. So she says... she's going to cut taxes for middle-class families. And we're going to kind of go point by point. And this is directly from her website. So she says she will do this by restoring two tax cuts designed to help middle-class and working Americans, the child tax credit and the earned income tax credit.
Okay. Here's the answer to that. These are already tax cuts that she won't let expire from the Trump tax cut in 2017. So it's something that's already there.
Yes. Yes.
Next.
She, on her website, no one earning less than $400,000 a year will pay more in taxes.
Okay. So I decided, let's look up how many people, what's the percentage of Americans that make over $400,000 a year? That's 1.8% of taxpayers. So somehow, what, 98.2% of taxpayers will never pay any more in taxes. Right. That's what she's saying.
That's what she said.
Then my question is, why did they hire 87,000 new IRS agents?
I don't know.
If they only are basically going after 1.8% of the country.
I don't know.
Okay.
She also says, again, from her website, enacting a billionaire minimum tax.
Take note, Mark Cuban.
Right. I know. Yeah. And quadrupling the tax on stock buybacks. Yeah. And as a former bond trader, you can really talk about this.
Yeah. I mean, stock buybacks are when companies want to buy back their stock from the market in order, whether they're trying to fight off a takeover or anything like that, a bunch of different reasons. But quadrupling that tax will hamstring so many companies. It's ridiculous.
And there's something else on her website that she has said on the record.
Yeah, well, it's not on her website.
That's what she said,
it's
not on her website.
Yeah, it's not on her website, but she has made known that she wants to institute a tax on unrealized gains. And right now, there is no such tax, right? It's zero.
And this would affect anyone with any kind of property.
Correct. Anything.
Yeah, anything.
But it's zero now because there is none. She wants a 25% unrealized gain tax. And when an unrealized gain is, let's just be really basic. Say you've got a house.
Yeah.
You own a house and that house goes up in 1 year. You have a great market. It goes up $100,000.
Okay.
Guess what you owe?
$25,000.
$25,000 that has to come out of your pocket to pay this.
Yeah.
And just think about how many things that you have. Maybe you've got old baseball cards or Barbie dolls that were worth, you know, nothing back in the day. And now they're worth $10,000. Guess what? You've got to come up with $2,500 to pay the tax on these things. Do you think maybe that's why they need the 87,000 new IRS agents? Because seriously, if they're going to go after everything, they're going to be in every aspect of your life.
All right, let's continue.
Please do.
From her website. She's going to make rent more affordable and home ownership more attainable. And again, verbatim, Vice President Harris has always stood up for renters and homeowners as Attorney General of California.
My comment on this is because California is just the model that we want for affordable housing.
And I'm going to interrupt
being
you.
Being a former resident.
Yeah, I was going to say, maybe you can't speak to it, but I can. I lived in California over 20 years. It is not affordable in Southern and Northern California, maybe somewhere in the farmland of the San Joaquin Valley, maybe, but it is outrageous. Also, as Attorney General, what did she have to do with any of that?
Yeah, it's, you know, maybe she went after some banks or things like that, but again, it's show.
But along this line, you know, home ownership, she plans to build 3 million more rental units and homes in her first term.
And I guess my question is, where exactly in the Constitution does it say that the federal government should be building local housing?
It doesn't.
Oh, it doesn't.
It doesn't.
Okay. All right.
That is such, I just, that right there, for some reason, just really sticks in my craw a little bit, because that's not the president's job, guys. It's just not, no matter who's in office.
It's
no
not
matter
the
what
federal government's job.
It's not. It's not. She also says she will cut red tape to make sure we build more housing faster and penalize firms that hoard available homes to drive up prices for local home buyers.
Okay, let's break that down. She's going to cut red tape. When have Democrats ever wanted less regulation, i.e. red tape?
Right.
That would be never.
Yeah. And then,
the last part, she's going to go after penalized firms that are hoarding available housing units. Guess who's buying them all up? All the hedge funds, the BlackRocks, all of these companies. And I really have serious doubts that she would go after these people because they are the money people.
Yes, they support her.
Yes.
Again, from her website, Vice President Harris knows rent is too high and will sign legislation to outlaw new forms of price fixing by corporate landlords.
Well, I think this is a perfect example to use as Springfield, Ohio.
Okay.
Right now, obviously, they've got the Haitian issue going.
Right.
Well, what's going on is local people that are living there, their rents used to be $850 a month, and now they're $1,600 to $1,700 because the Haitians are coming in with federal money, And they are driving up the price of these rents.
This is supply and demand. This is basic economics.
Yeah, this is not price fixing or gouging. This is the federal government getting involved in driving up prices.
It gets even better. And she loves to talk. She talks about this publicly all the time. She's going to provide first-time homebuyers with up to $25,000 to help their down payments, help with their down payments, with more generous support for first-generation homeowners.
So basically, you're screwed if you already own a house, right?
You're totally screwed. Yeah, everyone we know in our neighborhood is screwed.
So when I bought my first house, boy, would that have been nice to get a check from the federal government for $25,000.
I know.
What business is it of theirs to give money out for people to buy houses? I mean, does 2008 ring a bell, people, when we, you know, encouraged home ownership to people that probably shouldn't even be having them?
And I'm just going to throw this out there as someone who's never been a home owner. Because I lived in Southern California and couldn't afford to buy a house where I wanted to actually live. So I chose to rent. And we rent today. I don't think it's okay for the federal government to give me $25,000. I don't think that's all right to help me buy my first home. Do I plan to own a home one day? I do, indeed. But I don't think it's the federal government's job to help me out.
So you're not going to go with your hand out saying, please give me money so I can buy a house?
No, okay. I'm not. Okay. I'm not.
All right. Well, this one's my favorite. I want to jump into this
I know. Well, I'm going to introduce it because this is the one issue I feel like we are very, is it COPA?
Yeah, we're in agreement.
We're in agreement. Thank you. All right. Secure our borders. Fix our broken immigration system. And then when you ask her about this, she says, well, Donald Trump killed the bipartisan border bill, blah, 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 blah. Break it down, Edward.
Yeah, that's actually on her website that she blames Trump for this.
You can't blame Trump for the immigration problem that your administration caused.
Right.
Sorry.
But they're trying to use this, air quotes, bipartisan border bill. It was James Lankford from Oklahoma sat in with him. He actually voted against his own bill when it came down to it. But it was a horrible bill that allowed the president to let in 5,000 illegals a day. Okay. But there was all of these red tape or fine print that basically said the president could stop enforcing that 5,000 at any time for any reason. So it talks about extra border agents. Every time that we have hired more border agents in this administration, all they are doing is going to the border and processing more people. Right. They're not stopping people. They're just processing them quicker. ICE reported last week. Do you want to mention that?
Yeah, I'll do these two. Yes. Okay. So because this is not on her website. ICE reported last week that of the 7 million migrants they released, 663,000 had criminal histories, 13,000 were convicted of homicide, 16,000 of sexual assault, and 1,845 faced current homicide charges. So think about that. I mean, think about that. People are being released into the U.S. There's no way to find them or trace them, and they're criminals. And we're not talking about they robbed a store of bubble gum. We're talking about violent criminals. In addition to that, 70% of unaccompanied women who are crossing the border are raped by the cartels. This is tragic, guys. It's absolutely tragic.
It is. Yeah. For her to even open her mouth about the border. And by the way, she went down to the border this weekend and spent
2 minutes,
20 minutes.
I was kidding. Oh my God. I was totally kidding.
20 minutes staring at the fence and going,
Take a photo op. Yep. Yeah. All right. She's also, again, from her website, going to tackle the opioid. You know how I have a problem with that word. It goes back to our childhood. And fentanyl crisis. Under the Biden-Harris administration, the FDA made the overdose reversal drug naloxazine, I'm going to give the brand name, which is Narcan, available over the counter.
So you've caused this huge run at the border where they're bringing in gazillions of pounds of drugs.
Yeah, we need fentanyl, to connect that. Right? The border, the open border is connected to this crisis.
And so on your website, you then say, we made Narcan available over the counter. This is what you brag about?
Yeah.
That you're trying to stop the end result of a death?
I mean, exactly. And I just want to say that Narcan, it's not something that should be available over the counter. this is not something like out of Pulp Fiction where John Travolta put that needle into Uma Thurman's heart to revive her from a heroin overdose. This is serious shit. And I've seen it up close and personal. I won't go into the where, when, or why, but I've seen it happen in an ER with a loved one. And it is devastating to watch. And it is scary to watch. And you need medical personnel there when that person comes out of it. It is absolutely frightening. And this is so near and dear to my heart. And I didn't even know this was available over the counter until you told me.
Yeah.
That is so scary. I'll stop there. Anyway, feel free to comment. We see lots of people joining live today. We really appreciate you joining live. If you feel comfortable commenting, we will share your comments and respond to them. All right. I know you have sort of a rant you want to finish up with.
Well,
on this,
you know, this is such a important election. You know, everybody says that every time, but we are at a tipping point on which direction this country is going to go. And it's not going to just keep plodding forward. It's going to either go incredibly left or it's going to revert back to some of the more sane policies. But what I wanted to talk about is yesterday, late afternoon, we took our dog for a walk.
We did. It was finally cool enough and not raining. We've had like two months of heat and rain. So we finally took our dog for a walk.
Yep. And we're coming back home and we noticed our next door neighbor
has a new sign
out front.
We love this person.
And yeah, she's
amazing.
50-year-old teacher, great neighbor.
Yeah.
And the sign says Harris Walls, obviously. It actually says obviously.
I know it does.
I love the simplicity of it. I
do too.
For that. Yes.
I know. And she's not the only one with this sign I've noticed, by the way.
No, we
live in a blue dot.
We're in Birmingham, Alabama. But
we live in a blue dot, big time.
It's a very blue dot. But remember, just a few months ago, these were the same people that were 100% behind Joe Biden, right?
Yes.
They willfully had their eyes closed until it became obvious, right?
In that debate.
That he's a senile wreck.
In June.
And they knew. You know, the right has known this since 2020, right?
Yeah, we saw
it and we kept trying to raise the alarm. No. But when it became apparent that Joe Biden couldn't go on, talk of who was replacing him was going to be, what, Michelle Obama, Oprah Winfrey was out there,
Gavin Newsom,
Gretchen Whitmer.
I mean, no one wanted Kamala.
Surely it wasn't going to be Kamala.
No one wanted her.
Everybody knew she was an idiot
and
she had the lowest job approval in the history of the vice presidency.
As long as they've been keeping the record, yes.
Correct. But Joe goes, he anoints Kamala.
Well, it wasn't Joe.
Well.
It was Nancy Pelosi. It was other people.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure. But I think it really stunned the Obamas, the insiders.
Oh, that's
it really
true.
Did.
That might have, yeah.
And, you know, they actually wanted a contested DNC.
Which would have been great. Which would have been fantastic, because you don't just give over the presidency or the nomination to someone. That's not how our country works.
Yeah. You go out there. The best person wins.
Yeah,
obviously,
I think
Kamala would have had no chance to win that.
I know.
Zero
a
chance.
Competitive convention would have been so interesting. I would have loved it.
So Joe Biden totally F's that up. Right. And now every Democrat's expected to fall in line, willfully closing their eyes again. And support a candidate who can't answer a single question from a journalist who isn't basically a toe-sucking leftist.
Right.
I mean, but she can't give any specifics to the very important, the pressing problems of today. Instead, it's how she was raised, her mother worked, they bought a house, people took care of their lawns, right? We've heard this ad nauseum, the exact same lines.
But she's not intellectual. And she's not Hillary Clinton, guys. For all the people who are voting.
As much as I dislike Hillary, she was a sharp
Hillary
woman.
Was freaking smart and sharp and really like a policy wonk that was almost worked against her because she had problems relating to people and, you know, in a way that her husband never did. But Kamala Harris is not Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
She's not interested in policy. This was your rant. And I interrupted. All right, continue.
I love to get you going here. We'll get you going later on too.
Oh yeah, so, I know.
But so I mean, I just want to say, I know you people that have these Harris lawn signs. You're intelligent. You're nice people. We know you.
People in our neighborhood.
Great
yeah.
neighbors.
They're
yeah,
great.
We have a great neighborhood. But please look at the issues. Look at the policies being put forth by both candidates. And I ask, please put your love of the country over your hatred of Donald Trump. because it's obvious.
Yeah.
There you go.
All right.
End of rant.
That's your end of rant?
End of rant.
Yes. Yeah. All right. So let's look ahead to next week.
Yes. This is going to be good.
I'm actually kind of excited. So I've been doing Sober September. It's my second year of Sober September.
So when's the debate?
October 1st.
There you go. We're going to jump right into it.
We are. I've already got my wine ready. Not that I'm a super wino, but, you know, I just think it's good to, you know, give your body a break. So, but on Tuesday, October 1st, we have the one and only vice presidential debate between Walz and I'm so used to saying JD and between Walz and Vance. It's on CBS News. It's at 9 o'clock Eastern in New York City. The moderators are Nora O'Donnell from she's the evening news anchor, and Margaret Brennan, the host of Face the Nation. It's 90 minutes, as most of these debates are. And I don't know any rules. Do we know what the rules are?
I didn't see if they were standing.
Sitting. A lot of times they're sitting on these VP ones.
I think the mics will probably be open.
I think
will be good because they both can speak.
Yes, they can.
Which is not. I think they're actually probably better debaters than the presidential candidates.
I agree.
But obviously you've got two left wing. You know, it's going to be J.D. Vance versus, you know, three.
Brennan, so, O'Donnell, and Walz.
Yeah. What I'm obviously concerned, anxious about is the fact checking in real time.
Hopefully they won't be
but
doing that.
JD is really up on the issues.
He is.
And I am really looking forward to this one because I think he's got a good chance to expose Tim Walz for who he really is.
Yeah, and we won't go into it because we'll probably be talking about it next week, but it'll be interesting because they're both veterans, but they have very different track records.
they do indeed.
All right, let's move on to a great segment. This Week in Wins.
Yes, let's go.
All right.
From our friend Sarah Arnold at townhall.com. Love the town hall. Headline, more than 700,000 ineligible voters found on major swing states voter rolls.
Whoa.
So North Carolina, very important state this time, removed more than 700,000 ineligible voters from its list of registered voters just weeks before the 2024 election.
Good for them.
This comes after the RNC and the North Carolina Republican Party filed two lawsuits accusing the state's boards of elections of failing to check jury questionnaires to identify non-citizens. So they had no idea on there.
Wow.
And I actually read from Charlie Kirk. He posted on X, breaking, North Carolina State's election board has removed 747,000 ineligible voters from its rolls over the past 20 months, representing about 10% of all registrations.
That's
stunning.
Yeah, it is.
Stunning. Removals were because, voters died or they failed to vote in the last two election cycle, moved out of state, committed felonies, or changed addresses without re-registering. That's great. But keeping elections fair means aggressively updating the voter rolls to remove invalid voters. Unsurprisingly, it's always Democrats who want to keep these updates from happening. And in fact, they did file lawsuit against them to stop removing people from the goal. Some of the people that they removed, there were 130,000 dead people.
It should be removed.
Now, I don't know why anybody would have a problem with removing dead people.
I don't either.
And there were 290,000 duplicates.
Again, should be. You know what this reminds me of? I'm just going to throw it out there for business owners. If you've ever had a CRM, customer relationship management system. You want to keep your CRM updated. You know, typically most businesses go through, you know, whether it's once a year or even quarterly, but usually annually, and you go through and you update your CRM for this reason. You check for duplicates. Yeah. You, if you have people who are deceased, you know, you remove them or mark them as deceased and don't email them again because it's just going to bounce back. I mean, just this is just basic common sense.
Stop.
I know. I know you have an honorable mention.
I do. There's another Week in Wins that just happened recently.
Yes.
The honorable mention this week is the Hezbollah Secretary General Hassan Nasrallah was killed in an Israeli airstrike on Friday. He'd been in power since...
Whoa, slow down. The name was great, but slow it down.
He was killed in an Israeli airstrike on Friday.
Okay.
He had been in power since 1992.
Holy cow.
And was behind many of the terrorist attacks over the years, funded, of course, by Iran. I say two words, good riddance.
All right. That's a good honorable
mention. It is. You know, I actually saw a graph today. There were 12 Hezbollah leaders that have been targeted by Israel. 11 of them are gone.
Wow.
How'd you like to be that one
God,
other
Israel
guy?
Knows how to do it, man. All right. Too.
What do we have in WTF this week?
This weekend. What the fuck? Ooh. I'm going to say it. I'll just get that explicit rating from Apple. Thank you. This is from our friend James Gargan. Hopefully I'm saying that last name right, at thedailymail.com. And Edward gave me this one because it makes me mad. So taxpayer-funded, here's the headline. Taxpayer-funded Minneapolis food pantry bans white people as boss's astonishing outburst at local who complained is revealed. Okay, that's kind of a long headline. But anyway, yeah. Bottom line, food pantry, Minneapolis bans white people. So the boss of a Minneapolis food pantry funded by city taxpayers, that's really key, guys, has banned white people from taking advantage of the resource.
Banned who?
White people.
Oh.
Has banned white people.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Mikeyla, or Kiko Jackson, used a Minnesota state grant to launch the food trap project Bodega, designed to help poor and hungry residents living close to the Sanctuary Covenant Church in the north of the city. So, you know, great project, great idea, but she has state funding. The pantry only opened up on July 27th, but within months, it has been forced to close and relocate away from church grounds after Jackson attempted to block white people from accessing the service, and including a local chaplain who complained. If you're hearing dead air, I just, there's lots of eye rolling going on and lots of concern here. Okay. A sign on the door to the pantry reads how the food inside was specifically for, and this is a quote, Black and Indigenous folks, spelled F-O-L-X. Girl, spell, at least spell it right, only. After civil rights complaint was made against the pantry by a local, good for that person, yep. Mikeyla accused the complainant of political violence. Again, that's a quote from her. So here's the problem, though. The grant's description states how the funds are specifically designed to support organizations that work with U.S.-born African-Americans, from whom studies indicate that health has been impacted as the result of historical trauma.
Of what?
Historical trauma.
Okay.
This trauma includes post-traumatic slave syndrome.
Whoa, what?
You're right. I'm speaking too fast now.
No. I just want you to re-say that.
Post-traumatic slave syndrome.
Post-traumatic.
PTSS.
Slave syndrome.
And epigenetic inheritance. So here's what's here's what's interesting about this. It's still this week in WTF, but you know what? If the grant's description says that, then Jackson is not in the wrong here.
But you cannot discriminate.
But
you cannot give grants based on discrimination.
But that's my point.
Yes.
Do you blame the person who opened the food pantry? Or do you blame the state who made the restrictions on this grant? Because she's actually using the grant.
Anybody who's trying to help feed poor people, it shouldn't matter your color. That's just common sense.
I know. But I'm just saying, in this case, I actually blame the state of Minnesota because of the description.
By the way, who runs Minnesota?
Waltz.
Tim Walz,
yeah,
the governor. Walz.
I was saying it wrong. Yeah, Walz. Yeah. I will just say, as someone, again, years ago, when I was raising a child, my sister, and I medically was not doing well. And all of my friends said, you know, you absolutely should see if you can be eligible for welfare. And that caseworker took one look at the color of my skin, one look at the fact that I did have a degree, and the fact that the child I was raising, even though I had custody, was not my biological child. I had not given birth to my sister. And she said no. And I didn't have a chance. So I just, you know, again, I've been in that place where I didn't know how I was going to put food on the table for a child. And this just upsets me to no end. So actually, I blame the state of Minnesota.
Okay.
I do.
All right.
Oh, okay. I'm over that.
I still like the post-traumatic slave syndrome. We got it. Is that in the, what is that? The
DSM-5?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Okay.
Yeah. We'll find out from
someone.
Let's hope
I'm
not, sure.
Anyway.
Yes. All right. Give us something fun. Come on. Give us this.
You thought
week.
Your head was exploding before.
All right. This week in woke. Oh, that's right. This
will be a fun one, folks.
Okay.
Stay tuned here. All right.
Oh yeah. I'm going to,
This is from our friends at revolvernews.com. Headline is spiciest 1 minute take on entire COVID sham. It was all about hysterical female energy.
No. Now, who was this from again?
Well, it was originally up with Revolver News, but and in the article, they're quoting Heather McDonald.
Yes.
She's the one that gives this rant. Now, Heather McDonald is awesome. She writes.
She is most of the time.
She does mostly statistics. She's really into stats and figures. She writes a lot about policing and the criminal justice system.
Yes.
So let's go to the article because this is going to be fun.
Now, is this coming directly from her? Because
yeah.
I want to understand.
Yeah.
All right.
And some from the writers of the article itself. Okay. But there's an intriguing argument being made about the COVID pandemic response. And it's coming from a rather unexpected source, a woman.
Heather McDonald.
Thank you. Yeah. She suggests that the entire reaction to the virus was driven by a distinctly female worldview. Now, honestly, this is the spiciest and best take that we've ever seen, as the Revolver News is saying, and it's a perspective worth exploring, especially when we consider how the response played out, an emotional, hysterical overreaction, completely lacking any rational long-term thinking, fueled by fear, manipulation, and a mean girl mentality that pressured everyone to fall in line or else.
Okay, a woman was not in charge. Fauci was in charge. I can't even let Edward finish this just yet. A woman was not in charge. A woman didn't make this decision. A woman was not president who said, yes, Dr. Fauci, you're correct. I mean, this was one of Trump's biggest missteps by far. A woman was not the person who said, yes, let's shut down all the schools.
May I continue?
Yes.
Thank you. Okay. Instead of a measured, data-driven approach, we saw a wave of panic wash over the entire globe, pushing us into lockdown, school closures, and economic chaos, all based on worst-case scenarios and the inability to see beyond the immediate threat. Sadly, this is the very essence of the female reaction.
Okay, is this coming from Revolver or Heather McDonald?
This is coming from Heather McDonald. Focusing on the here and now without pausing to consider the bigger ramifications. It's like the entire world was thrown into the arms of a frantic, overly protective helicopter mother who was desperate to shield her children from danger and ended up causing more harm than good.
Heather, I still respect you, but I totally disagree with you. This is so off base.
Continue. And she says, the truth is we had data from Italy pretty early on.
That's true.
Showing that the average age of death from COVID was around 80, with most victims having three or more comorbidities.
Right. I remember. Yeah.
Yes. This proved that what we were dealing with was unfortunate, but it was hardly the apocalypse we were led to believe it was. But instead of assessing the situation with calm and reason, the response was sheer hysteria. We shut down entire economies, isolated people from their loved ones, and wreaked havoc on children's social, mental, and physical development. All for what? A fear-driven, knee-jerk reaction that had hysterical woman written all over it.
And stop. No, I'm going to stop.
Please do.
Okay.
Please interject.
I'm going to take back part of what I said. I still respect Heather McDonald, right? I got her name right. I know who she is, but I still respect her intelligence and her writing ability. But I think this is so off base when the people in charge were not women. The people, you could make the argument like the heads of teachers unions were women. You could make that argument as far as keeping the schools closed at different state levels. But those initial things that happened were all done by men. And I, okay, hold on.
Okay.
And I absolutely resent this fear-driven, knee-jerk reaction has hysterical woman written all over it. And I can say for myself and my friends, I can only think of one person that falls into that category. One woman that falls into that category, and I won't say who it is. And she was if I go into detail, she'll know who she is and I don't want to hurt her feelings. But I know one woman of all my female friends that actually fell into this category.
Okay. But two things. One, Dr. Deborah Birx was on par with Tony Fauci, Dr. Fauci.
Okay.
Woman.
Rochelle, but who did Trump listen to? Fauci.
Rochelle Walensky.
Yes.
Head of the CDC. Woman. But I think Heather's bigger point is not necessarily the decisions at the top, but in everyday life, when you had Karens screaming at people, "You're killing us," and overreacting to force the vast majority of society to comply. And I think that's where she's going with this. But to finish up, to quote the character, author,
this is all
Melvin
Edward, by the
Udall.
Way. This is Edward. This is not the
Melvin
article.
Udall, the author in As Good As It Gets, on
played by
Jack Nicholson.
Yes.
On how he writes so well for women. Quote, "I think of a man and I take away reason and accountability."
You know, I don't want to punch the messenger, but I'm about to.
That's just too good of a line not to use.
I know it is
really
a good
is.
Line.
It really is.
It so. Is.
Well, that was fun.
Just makes me mad. But I see everyone's still watching, so they must be slightly entertained.
All right.
That just made me mad. Heather, I'm so fucking pissed at you right now. Anyway, okay. Otherwise, good show.
Thank you.
All right.
I get you.
So thank you so much for joining us live today. Please follow us on all the social media platforms, and you can join us live, as many of you have, on most Sundays at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, 1 p.m. Eastern. And we stream live on YouTube, Rumble, LinkedIn, X, and Facebook. If you're listening to the podcast, which always drops Monday morning, please be sure to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast wherever you're listening right now. And you can support our show by joining our locals community. And that is in the show notes. You can see a link. And again, you can learn more and follow us on myfavoriteconservative.show. That's myfavoriteconservative.show. And we entertained getting a yard sign to counteract the Harris walls, obviously. But our yard sign would be promoting our show. But Edward's a little worried about it.
Well, I'm worried about the tolerant, intolerable left.
Yeah.
Intolerant left.
But anyway, we'll see what happens. Anyway, thank you again for joining us live. And I won't be traveling next week. So we'll see.
You won't. And we've got drunk debate time.
Yes.
Coming up in a couple days. So let's
I didn't
do
say
it.
Anything about getting drunk. I just said I was going to have my, no.
You haven't had an ounce of alcohol in a month. This side of it yet. Three-glass night.
Well, okay, it's never a three-glass night. I can't handle that anymore. All right. Thank you so much for joining us live, everyone. Bye-bye. Thanks.